From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 28th day of April, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. We'll hear how the RFS rules impact biomass-based diesel RINs, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day will be here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.65 and a quarter, 4.5 higher. July at $4.75 and a half, up 6.25. And December corn at $4.95 and three quarters a bushel. A settlement price there, 6.25 cents higher as well. May soybeans, $11.73, down 4.25. July 2.75 at 11, lower that is, at $11.89 and a quarter. And November beans, $11.67, a penny and a quarter higher. Bean meal futures down 40 cents. The bean oil, $1.12 higher. Wheat futures for the soft red, July, that's the harvest month, at $6.57 and three quarters, up 28 cents. Today, and the hard red at 7.02 and a quarter, 27 cents higher. Taking a look at some of the other numbers from the CME group in Chicago, we'll start with the livestock figures, and they show us that the nearby cattle futures are trading for the day at $253.50. That's up $4.55. Feeder cattle, a settlement price at $371.72 and a half, $4.27 and a half higher, and the lean hogs at $94.15, down 22 and a half cents. Here to make sense of some of those numbers with us is Naomi Bloom. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the crop progress report from yesterday. What'd you think of those numbers? Looks like Illinois, Indiana, Iowa are really moving along pretty good. Illinois and Indiana particularly.
Yeah, absolutely. So strong planting pace in the I states for sure. When you look at the big picture, the nationwide corn is 25% planted. Last year at this time, we were 22% planted, and the five-year average 19%. Beans trucking along on that planting pace at 23% planted. Last year we were 17% planted, and the five-year average 12%. So folks are running where they can run before those rains came through, and maybe, you know, things are going to be a little bit slower this week with the recent rainfall that's happened, but we're off to a great start. A little bit hard to say that there's any type of delay in the big picture when you've got, you know, a quarter of the corn and beans in the ground already.
What do you make of the wheat futures today? Why was there such a jump there?
Well, we had the crop progress ratings for the winter wheat, which just continued to show how winter wheat is only 30% good to excellent. And a year ago, it was 49% good to excellent. And so when you look kind of at, you know, the breakdown, Kansas, the number one producing state of winter wheat, was just 23% good to excellent, and 43% of the Kansas crop is poor to very poor. So that kept the market supported, and then we saw just additional technical cut buying come through for the Kansas contracts, and then the Chicago wheat contracts got excited and said, don't forget about us, and all of a sudden we saw some technical buying there. You know, it's interesting, though, because we're rightfully so trading in the quality issues for the Kansas City wheat, and the funds have been active, and we've got some technical buying. But DTN had reported today that the winter wheat down at the Gulf has $1.60 per bushel premium price to what's happening with the prices in Europe and Russia for hard wheat. So globally, we are starting to outprice ourselves competitively, and we also still have a situation where global ending stocks are sufficient. So I think that this wheat run, definitely, in my opinion, it's justified, but we're also at the point of, okay, everybody, we got to keep an eye on this and keep it real and maybe just be focused on some pricing here, because I don't know how much more this wheat market can run.
Is the $1.60 premium at the port as much about what's happening in Kansas State as it maybe is about the idea that wheat may not be able to make its way out of Russia and Ukraine as easily as it has during the war over the last 4 years?
You know, that's actually a really good point, and I think that that has a lot of validity to it. We are still in the midst of that war over there. On the Newswire today, Ukraine said that they shot down more than 33,000 Russian drones during the month of March. So that really tells you how the war over there continues to escalate. And definitely, it could be countries wanting to have secure product, and they know that the United States is going to be able to get the product to where it needs to go and get it there on time. And that could be a concern, absolutely, out of the Black Sea.
What do you make of the rest of the marketplace, corn, soybeans, and such?
Well, we are still range-bound for the old crop corn and December corn futures, knocking on $5 corn for December futures. It was interesting to note, though, that the March contract for corn and the July 2027 contracts were able to make new highs today. But we'll see if December futures for the 2026 have a reason to break through that $5 handle or not. Might be hard to get through that without some specific friendly news. And with the planting progress going so fast, I'm not quite sure what news it would take to get and justify December corn futures to be able to trade above $5. So I do know there was a lot of cash movement today between old crop cash and new crop cash sales on the rally that we've had, and just the opportunity that's in front of folks.
Before I let you go, I do want to know, in your area, have farmers been able to turn a wheel, really? Because it was so very wet early on there.
Yeah, Wisconsin is a very different animal right now compared to other places in the in the Midwest. We've had so much rain over the past 2 weeks. The area where I live, it's been 5 to 8 inches of rain, and nothing is moving. We had another half inch last night. I think some of the dairy farms are getting a little antsy, wanting to be able to get some of the manure out there and spread on fields and get things going. But we'll see. We do have some drier weather coming, but we are not forecast to hardly get above 60 degrees for the next 2 weeks. So it's a little slow going up here, but we've been through that before.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. The new federal rules regarding biomass-based diesel fuel production in the United States are going to push domestic production capacity to its limit this year and next year. Agricultural economists Todd Hubbs and Scott Irwin have written an article on the topic. It's part of their Rewriting the RFS Playbook series. The RFS, or the Renewable Fuel Standard, is what brought corn-based ethanol into wide use in the 2000s and early 2010s. The production of corn-based ethanol has mostly maxed out. It is, on a related note, why the United States Congress is now grappling with year-round E15 or 15% ethanol blends for the nation's gasoline supply. However, in an odd twist, because corn-based ethanol is exported as well as being used domestically, the way it counts towards meeting mandates set in the RFS, well, that comes up short. The math here is difficult to calculate. It is what Todd Hubbs from Oklahoma State says he and Scott Irwin from the University of Illinois have been trying to bottom line, as it's related to how many gallons of biomass-based diesel fuel, think soy diesel and renewable diesel, need to be produced to meet the new renewable volume obligations released by the Trump administration. Each gallon is assigned a RIN, or Renewable Identification Number.
The new mandates require net RIN generation for D4s to be $10.99 billion in 2026 and $11.89 billion in 2027, which is an amazing increase from the $7.1 billion required in 2025, which is very bullish, you know, for feedstock to make biomass-based diesel. And it really pushes us to the limit of BBD capacity in this country. So, it what we do in the article, Todd, is we sort of go through how we calculated our balance sheets and some of the assumptions we make. And we do make a lot of assumptions because you have to. And there are uncertainties involved, but this is Scott and I's best effort, you know, to figure out how many RINs are we going to need to meet the RVOs in the D4 category over the next 2 years.
By the next 2 years, Todd Hubbs means this year, 2026, and next year, 2027. Again, the math and the policy here is difficult. In part, this is because Congress originally assigned RIN numbers based on the desired environmental impact. The lower the number, the more desired the related fuel, generally speaking. D6 RINs require a 20% greenhouse reduction. Ethanol made from corn is an example of a D6 RIN. Now, D6 RINs are also the default, or one-for-one value, meaning 1 gallon of ethanol production is equal to 1 RIN. Think of a RIN as the currency within the renewable fuel standard. There are different denominations with different values, and the federal government limits how each may be used. So while the D6 RINs are the default 1 gallon equals 1 RIN, the government only counts them for use and trade within the domestic gasoline supply. If you put 10 gallons of 10% ethanol in your car, for instance, that's worth 1 RIN. But that RIN generally cannot be traded to other RIN categories. The diesel fuel RINs, D4, well, they can. The D4 diesel fuel RIN can trade up to the D6 ethanol for gasoline RIN category. D4s assigned to soy diesel are worth 1.5 RINs, and those assigned to renewable diesel are worth even more, maybe 1.6 or 1.7. Now that's a lot of math. Suffice it to say, corn ethanol RINs cannot be substituted in for soy diesel or renewable diesel made from soybeans. But it can happen the other way around. I've limited the discussion here to corn and soybeans, but other crops and feedstocks are used in each RIN category. Again, here's Todd Hubbs and basically the same information.
Okay, well, inside the renewable fuel standard, the different RIN categories are nested based off how much carbon they offset, right? So D6 is the base RIN. And like you said, it's typically made with corn to create ethanol. Milo is also used, and there's some other feedstocks that are used, but the vast majority of it is corn ethanol. And they set that at 15 billion gallons in the RVOs. Now, when they do small refinery exemptions, that goes back through the percent standards, and that'll up that D6 number because it's a percent of all the gasoline and diesel consumed in the United States. And when they take out some from the obligated parties for SREs, when they reallocate it 70%, that's what they're talking about, giving it back in subsequent years. And so the reason that you have to use D4s to make up the difference is the standard for D6 is above what we blend in the United States. When they first did the RFS, they thought it would just, you know, our gasoline consumption would just keep going up. And, you know, when you set it at 15 billion gallons, 10%, you know, you would just meet it with D6s. But that never happened. So there's a D6 shortfall because we don't blend 15 billion or however many, 15.7 billion gallons of ethanol into our gasoline. And because of that shortfall, the next available thing to meet that obligation, the RVOs, is a D4. Now, you can use a D5, a D4, or a D3, but D4 is where all the action is because we make a lot of biomass-based diesel. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. Actually, the United States exports corn-based ethanol. RIN numbers assigned to those gallons, they're retired. They do not count. If they were used domestically, the D4 RINs, biomass-based diesel and renewable diesel, wouldn't necessarily need to be used to meet the annual D6 RIN mandate.
Yeah, the D6s can't move anywhere. If you generate a D6 RIN, it's going to meet the D6 category. And the what's nested is the D4s can meet the D6s, the D5 can meet the D6s, and a D3 can meet any of the advanced mandate plus the D6 if necessary, but we rarely, you know, exceed the quantity necessary to meet the volume obligation in D3s. So the idea is when you have this shortfall because we're not blending enough ethanol into our domestic gasoline supply. What comes in to make up the difference is D4s.
It is this nesting, using D4 RINs to meet D6 mandates, along with the limited biomass-based and renewable diesel production in the United States, that has Irwin and Hubs thinking about the marketplace. Now, RINs have a limited lifespan, but can be carried forward or banked.
That's why this is so bullish for biomass-based diesel production and feedstock usage, is because there's a shortfall. Yes, we have carried a pretty nice bank into 2026, but based off the production we've seen through the first quarter, you know, they've in essence been drawing the bank because they've not been meeting the levels necessary to meet the mandate thus far this year. And so they're going to have to pick up production substantially to hit the mandate or carry deficits into 2027. So the idea that we're going to, D6 isn't the place that makes up anything. It's the other categories, and particularly D4. We do blend a lot of ethanol in the gasoline supply. We've seen the percentages going up over time a little bit, but we're still in that 10.5, 10.6 range for the most part. It varies month to month on the blending percentage. And we're not going to get to 15.7 billion gallons or 15 billion gallons even. So there's going to be a shortfall.
The 10.5 Hubs mentions is the variance around the 10% blend in a gallon of gasoline. It can be above or below that within a limit. Again, D4 RINs will be used to make up for the D6 shortfall. It could represent something like 520 million gallons.
It's a lot. Yeah. Depending on what kind of RIN calculation you use, like for FAME, you know, they're getting 1.5. Some renewable diesels 1.6, some's 1.7. But yes, basically that's what we're talking about. Just that part to backfill, right? The D6 shortfall. But they raised the volume obligations just for biomass-based diesel significantly. So when you add that D6 shortfall onto it, it's very, very, it's a lot of RINs that need to be generated in the D4, according to our calculations.
Here's the but in all of this. We've discussed the feedstocks as corn and soybeans. And certainly, the diesel fuel does not have to be made from soybeans. In fact, the guidelines don't, until 2028, favor in any way feedstocks produced by U.S. farmers.
Well, it's going to be really tight on capacity as is through 2026 to 27. Given the slow start to 2026 and just the sheer amount needed in 2027. So, you know, we're going to import feedstock for sure to make biomass-based diesel. The question is how much renewable diesel or biodiesel we're going to have to import, or if we're going to import it, because we haven't been importing very strongly recently due to 45Z and other considerations. You know, This is sort of off the beam a little bit, but diesel prices in the European Union and East Asia have gone up significantly due to the conflict with Iran. Is the biodiesel over there going to come this way, or are they going to blend it? You see what I'm saying? If diesel prices are above biodiesel prices or even close to it, you're going to have to really raise the price to get it over here. So that's for future articles, Todd. We're trying to, we're working through all the permutations. But the idea of how much D4 needs to be generated, it's a substantial increase in the 26 and 27 RVOs from what we've ever seen before under the RFS.
Now, Hub says it will be interesting to see how that increase plays out in the market for oilseed crops like soybeans. You may follow the progression of the Rewriting the RFS Playbook articles penned by Todd Hubs and Scott Irwin on the Farm Doc Daily website. On this Tuesday, let's take a look at the weather forecast for the Corn Belt, across the nation, in fact. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start in the Corn Belt. My gauge yesterday carried 2 inches of rainfall, and we have been progressing really well as it's related to planting progress across the Midwest. Will there be another break to help farmers continue that progress over the next week?
Yeah, we're going to see a weather pattern shift that is going to be taking the very active pattern over the last several weeks that has brought off and on rain to a lot of the Midwest and Corn Belt region and shift it into areas that really could use it. We're going to see better rain chances down into the Delta, down into the southeastern portions of the United States where drought conditions have really developed. A lot of the dryness that was on drought monitors just a few weeks ago across a lot of the Midwest and Corn Belt is gone with these recent rains. So now it looks like a transition to drier weather, especially in the northern and northwest Corn Belt. We're still going to see some rain in the short term here across southern areas of Illinois, Indiana, into parts of the Ohio Valley, while drying conditions will be developing across Iowa and parts of the upper Midwest.
In the Delta and the Southeast, will this rainfall go very far towards alleviating the drought conditions there?
It's going to be helping, but when you get into the drought conditions that they're in down there, it's kind of like eating an elephant. You just kind of have to nibble at it one bite at a time. And this is a pretty good bite, but it's not the whole thing.
And then to the Southwest, particularly Oklahoma and Kansas, for the hard red winter wheat crop. How's that doing? And then maybe you could go north to your areas and talk to about the wheat crops there, too.
Well, for portions of Oklahoma, especially central and eastern Oklahoma, there's still going to be some rain chances down there. Kansas is a different story, especially in the central and western counties of Kansas. That area is affected by the significant dryness that's coming out of the central Rockies and southern plains areas, and that also includes a good portion of Nebraska. Rainfall amounts have been modest over the last week or so, and there will be some rains late this week across portions of eastern Colorado and far western Kansas. But there's still a large area there in the central and western portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, and eastern Colorado that still are very dry.
Hey, Don, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org, where right now, if you scroll down to the calendar of events and click on Thursday, you'll see a webinar hosted there by the Farm Dog team. Gary Schnitke and Nick Polson will deal with the very tight budgets that farmers across the state of Illinois and the Midwest will have to manage going through this growing season and into the next one, and how they might do that. You can sign up for the webinar for free. Again, click on the calendar of events for Thursday of this week on our website at willag.org, or you can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and click on events and webinars. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.